This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are on a Thursday. One Bills Live is your program. First round, Steve Tasker with you. Ready to go here as the team is back on the practice field. The base is pumping about 50 yards from where we sit.
It is, it's a warm, sunny day out on the in mid-November.
Oh, my gosh.
Practicing outside, breaking a sweat, no less.
Get your last dose of vitamin D.
Ooh, baby.
Which we don't get nearly enough of in the wintertime with all the gray days we get. So
give me some.
Yeah, I went out there. I was soaking it all up, even though my dermatologist might not be happy about it. Didn't have a hat on, but it was 10 minutes.
Sunscreen in November?
You know, you need – my wife sent me this. You know, you get stuff that you see on the internet. You send it to your spouse or whatever. Hey, check this out. This is pretty interesting. Right. So vitamin D is – critical. Like, you really need it for your body, and when you have vitamin D deficiency, your chances of cancer and a whole bunch of other things go up. And so it's like, well, dang, how do we win that battle? Because you don't want to get skin cancer from too much UV sun exposure, but at the same time, the sun provides you with vitamin D that your body needs. So where's the balance there?
Take a supplement.
Yeah, I do take a daily vitamin, so.
Yeah, take a supplement. And I'll say this, my daughter lives in Alaska.
Not a lot of sun there this time of year.
Yeah, sunrise is a thing of the past. It's a big deal up there.
Yeah.
Everybody takes vitamin D.
You have to.
You got to.
You get to winter. You got 4 hours of daylight.
Right, it gets light, like in Anchorage where she's at, I think. We've been up there. It's a bunch.
Like summer's great. 20 hours of daylight.
Right. We get up there and it gets light at 11 a.m., dark at 3 p.m.
Oh my gosh.
And the light, when you say it's light, it's like.
It looks like
dusk,
dawn. Yeah, it looks like dawn or dusk.
Yes.
One or the other.
But the other end of it,
so is
it's 11:30 at night
because
you just got blue sky.
I know, but so tell me, so is the sun just low on the horizon
well, it
for
comes
those
at
4 hours?
Such an oblique
it's never
angle.
High in the sky.
Right, it comes down at an angle, so it never, like during
it's
the summer
here. It's just skimming the horizon
like, you know
the
what
whole
it's
time.
Like? In the summertime here in western New York, the sun drops down at such an angle. When it hits sunset, it's dark in like 10 minutes. Up there, it starts to get dimmer like – and then 2 hours later, it's still kind of day. You know what I mean? It takes a long time
about
to get dark.
When it's long hours.
Right.
But in the winter, is the sun just skimming the horizon for those four
yes,
hours
it
the
drops
whole time?
Down, it drops down just below the horizon, then it comes right back up in the summer. And then in the winter, it never reaches above the – it just
oh, the
barely,
whole thing is never above the horizon?
It does, but it barely gets up there, and then it goes back down.
Man,
you know?
I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make it.
The sun rises. The
Show sun me the light.
The sun rises in the southeast and sets in the southwest.
Oh man,
you know, and it's just. Like,
I don't think I could do that.
It's rough.
I'd have to bust it to the equator.
It's
fast.
Rough.
I would not make it.
Yeah, so it. You know, at noon, it's like, man, what is it like?
Couldn't do it.
7:30 at night, but it's
I'm
just
not.
The opposite. And I'll say this though,
I'm not a seasonal depression guy either. But
right.
That might get me there.
Here's the thing, too, though.
That might get me there.
Another thing about it is that it moves fast. So up there, there's like 5 minutes of difference between, like, the day's 5 minutes longer or 5 minutes shorter.
Every day. Each
successive
day.
So a week is like a half an hour, it seems like, right? Or like 10 days is like a half an hour difference in the sunlight, one way or the other. Either
6 days. Basically.
Yeah,
it's
so
a half
it's,
an hour you're losing every day.
At certain times of the year, that daylight changes to darkness, or darkness turns to daylight fast, and it grows and shrinks real fast. So, it's interesting in that way
That's a tough road to hoe for me. I think I would come down. With
I'll say this
depression
though.
With that.
I'll say this though, Brownie. You've heard me talk about it. It is spectacular up there.
Oh, it's
spectacular.
It's the final frontier.
Spectacular.
It really is.
It is. Man, that's when you You pop down. You want to colonize a planet. That's the one you want to colonize.
Well,
it's just just drop me in that. It's just awesome.
There are areas of Maine that are pristine and untouched too, and it's great. Like trees right down to the waterline.
Rhode Island's the same way.
Trees right down to the waterline. You don't see that in too many parts of this country anymore.
That's right.
But yeah, in Alaska and in certain areas of Maine and probably some other areas
all the way
that
down
I'm not
the west
familiar
coast
with.
West coast of Canada's like that.
Maybe the northern reaches of Minnesota
are
like
into
that.
You go up into where Juneau is, where you got the island. I don't even know what that region they call it. It's
beautiful country.
It's spectacular. Yeah. It warms your heart just to look at it. It's pretty cool. But you got to live through a long night to get there, bro.
Oh, yeah.
It gets light next month so we can see the scenery.
A night I'm not willing to undertake, at least full time anyway. Might go visit for a little bit, but...
Oh, it's the best, I'm telling you. I recommend it. I really recommend it. I'm a big beach guy, like Hawaii. I've been to, all the Pro Bowls I went to, Hawaii, Florida. Yeah. I lived in Texas for a minute, when I was with the Oilers. I'm a big sunshine fan, beach guy.
Oh, yeah.
But man,
especially
with
where we live.
You head up there, it's a different vibe. It's awesome.
I get it. We have to get you practice updates. Bill's practice updates are presented by LECOM, Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. And it begins with Josh Allen, who during the media viewing portion of practice was not out there participating. So, once again, it looks as though Case Keenum will be taking all of the first team reps in practice again today. So we'll wait on the Thursday injury report for official word. But Josh was not out there at the start of practice, so it tends to look like he will not be participating for a second straight day due to his right throwing elbow injury. And I guess it's good from the standpoint of, again, you're giving Case Keenum all the first-team reps, so if he's playing, he's all the more prepared. Maybe we get some more clarity we will get more clarity tomorrow on where Josh stands, because that's when designations for Sunday's game will come out. Is he doubtful? Is he questionable? Is he going to play? Or is he out? We'll get one of those designations when the Friday injury report comes out tomorrow, but we'll get an update today after practice is over. Among the other developments at practice, on the good news side of the ledger, you had Matt Milano out of his red non-contact jersey in practicing today, so hopefully he's doing more today than he did yesterday, now that he's out of that non-contact jersey. So too was Dane Jackson out of the non-contact jersey, so that was good. Roger Saffold back at practice after a veteran rest day. So too was Von Miller. So good on those fronts. Kair Elam, however, not practicing today. He was out there doing stretch, but he was in sneakers, no helmet, and he went off to the side with athletic trainers dealing with an ankle injury that he suffered in last week's game against the Jets, left the game for a period of time, did come back and finish, but is on the injury report this week with an ankle injury and not participating today.
He was listed as limited yesterday, so
that's right.
He might have taken a step back or maybe getting an idea of when he could be ready, and they take him today off and then come back tomorrow kind of thing.
Yeah. We don't know how they planned on playing the week out, but it's possible. It's possible
so
that
he did
it's
a
setback.
Look,
maybe he works out on the ankle and practice on Wednesday and it swells up overnight. You
they
know what
may
I mean?
Call
they're like,
him, yeah.
Let's back off.
And maybe today is just as limited as he was yesterday. Maybe he didn't do too much yesterday either, although I thought he had cleats on yesterday, but I don't know. We'll see.
Jordan Poyer not participating again today due to the elbow injury. He's on the side riding the stationary bike. So there's that. And Steve, help me out with Tremaine Edmonds. I forgot to look for him. I did not recall seeing him.
I did not see him.
So I believe he is going to be on the side as well, but we'll wait for the Thursday injury report for confirmation of that. But I did not see him out there as marked down. So there is that. That is pretty much your practice update at this point. Got to go around the NFL a little bit here, Steve. Obviously, we have Thursday night football, which, again, unfortunately, is not exactly a barn burner of a matchup once again. You got to wonder what the folks at Amazon are thinking. I know overall they're happy because, their subscriber base went up like 12 million since the start of the season. But Falcons, Panthers. Like
4-5 against 2-7.
I mean, the Panthers might be the worst team in football.
Yeah.
Might be.
Yeah, I'll just call it right now. Panthers are looking for a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that threw the first touchdown in the history of the franchise would be a great candidate.
Ooh, Frank Reich.
Would be a great candidate.
Look at you delving back into the history of the Carolina Panthers.
Would be a great candidate. And I'm sure there are others as well.
Not a bad idea, Steve.
He's available for an interview, too, I heard. I'm just saying. I haven't talked to him. I have not talked to Frank at all. But I've relayed some messages through guys that have been in touch with him. Because I don't want, you know, I'm the last
guy. Well, he's getting besieged, right? Like
with
after,
with
all the friends that he has, right?
Guys like Frank get a lot of well wishes when stuff like this happens to him.
Yeah, because he's a great dude.
He's a great dude. And I think even his players probably reached out to him and said, hey, thank you for everything you did. And knowing Frank, I know this too. The guy's probably, he's still rooting for that team. He's still pulling for all those guys on
there. He's got relationships with a lot of the guys on that
right.
staff
those,
who
that
got
staff
left
is,
holding the bag.
That's right. So, and a lot of those guys owe him a debt of gratitude for giving him an opportunity. So, all of that. I'll bet he got a text from Eberflus, head coach of the Bears.
Chicago.
Because, you know, Eberflus was hired by Josh McDaniel and kind of forced on Frank. And I talked to Frank, and those two guys, Eberflus and Frank, got along great. Frank, he said he knew 5 minutes into the first conversation they had that they were going to be fine.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of success there together. So guys like that around the league reach out. You know, Ken Wisenhunt, who Frank worked for and with the Chargers, all those guys, all the Philadelphia guys, you know, Peterson, all of those guys I know probably reached out to Frank and said, hey, bro, been there, you know, especially a guy like Peterson. So, yeah, it's way too early in the conversation to think about these spots, but Indianapolis is going to be looking for a guy. So is Carolina, and there's going to be a few others as well. They're going to be looking for head coaches that we don't know about yet.
Right.
We can only guess.
Steve, I have to tell you, this might be my favorite story of the week, maybe the entire season. No. And not surprisingly, it includes the Patriots. Bill Belichick admitted to the media that the Patriots, unintentionally, were tipping off their plays. Colts and the Jets, in two of the more recent games, knew what was coming pre-snap on offense from the Patriots' offense, and they were calling him out. C.J. Mosley, the Jets linebacker, he was calling out Patriots' plays based on certain tells across the front of the formation, whether it was a lineman with his hand light on the ground, whatever it was. Somebody's with a foot in a certain way. They look for these little tells when they study film, and C.J. Mosley found some. The Colts found some, and they were calling out the New England Patriots' offensive plays before the snap happened. And they were right a good portion of the time. And all I have to say, Steve, is this. Karma is a you-know-what, because the team that was long accused of improperly filming other teams' practices to get a handle on their plays are now having it done to them. Well, if the shoe fits, baby. Oh,
well,
love it.
Brownie, pump the brakes. The Patriots won both those games.
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care. I just want it done to them so they know what it feels like.
They won those games when
I don't
the other
care.
Team knew they were coming. What are they?
The only reason they beat the Jets was because Zach Wilson was a tire fire at quarterback with three interceptions.
All right, maybe. But still, I mean, they still won those games. That's the bad part.
I just wish it would have cost them a game or two. That would have been more delicious.
Yeah,
but
and that's probably
here, the karma here is just so fantastic.
That's probably the only reason Bill Belichick fessed up is because they still won those games.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a little bit of a problem. That's a little bit of a problem. Tipping your plays. At least,
I mean,
well,
I'm
here's
sure
the thing.
It's not the first time.
What
it's
happens
happened.
Is, yeah, what happens is, and if they know what happens is usually on those things, by a set, or and sometimes you get more information than you do others, but the defensive players will say, hey, listen, the guard is pulling, or so they'll give them an idea of at least what that guy's doing.
Yeah.
Maybe not on the play. It could be play action rather than a real running play. But all of that said, you know, it's bad. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. And it's not our problem. They have been.
It's so delicious.
They have been.
Just give me more of it. More. And still, they're 5-4.
They are the best team ever at, call it what you want, spying, espionage, whatever, knowing more about the other team than any other team knows about their opponent. Whether they film their opponent's practices, steal their game plans, pirate their defensive signals, eavesdropping on their electronic communication, you name
it. Cutting out their electronic communication.
Yeah, with the on-off switch, whatever. They have been at the forefront of that for a couple of decades now. And when teams finally got to the point, and I'll say this too, that's why guys boomerang out of there. They go out there, get a coaching job someplace. It doesn't go as well because they aren't doing the same thing that Patriots are doing. They just boomerang, come back, and you know, it's the circle of trust. Mm. Josh McDaniel's going to be coaching for the Patriots next year.
Probably.
You know, they're just, you know.
Probably.
Mark Davis is like, "Why? What's the problem here? Why aren't you, you know, what are you doing? Get out." So,
yeah.
So to have this accusation leveled at them, or at least come back to them like this, you're right. It does taste pretty good.
It does taste good. Matthew Stafford, a surprise addition to the Rams injury report this week, got put in concussion protocol on Wednesday.
Yeah, we found
which
that
is
out
kind
yesterday.
Of a weird time for something like that to happen. They played 4 o'clock game on Sunday, and sometimes it takes 24 hours for concussion symptoms to arise. And so my suspicion is concussion symptoms show up Monday night. They put him in the concussion protocol Monday night, but they don't really tell anybody until they meet the media on Wednesday.
Yeah, if that's the case.
And then he's on the Wednesday injury report and concussion protocol.
Yeah, that's the best.
That's my suspicion.
That's the best case scenario for them.
Yeah.
The next best, or what the could be worse, is he says, "Listen, this ain't going away. I got a headache and it's bothering me." Hmm. And they're like going, "Doop." Put him in then they got to put him in the protocols.
Well, they put him through a series of tests, baseline testing, and it's like, "Oh, you know what? You do have a concussion.
You got one somewhere.
Maybe it's a mini one or whatever, but the results of the testing
then
show you're not at your baseline level."
Then they didn't put him in until Wednesday. And if that's the case, you got a hard time making it to the game.
That's true. Yeah. But if it was a Monday evening situation, because I've seen it here with players over the years. You know, I remember the running back that the Bills had here, the Williams kid from Florida State.
Oh, Carlos.
Carlos Williams. He had a couple of hard hits in the game, was productive, comes out of the game, and then all of a sudden we're talking to Rex Monday afternoon, like the coaches usually meet the media, and he's like, we had to put Carlos Williams in concussion protocol. Because he got up the next day, he was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And sometimes that happens. Those concussion symptoms show up 24 hours later. It is not uncommon.
I had a number of concussions during my career, and mine were not like that. I knew when I got mine.
Yeah, right away.
Yeah. Somebody knew.
Because I don't remember knowing.
Yeah, right. Because they could tell.
Yeah.
And
he's had a brain injury.
In fact, Billy Brooks knew.
Oh, wide receiver.
The moment it happened, he goes, "Hey, you all right?" And I go, "Yeah, yeah." He goes, and he's like,
"Get him off."
He's like, "Take me." I'm like, "Why? Why?" You know, they take me over to the sideline. Start asking me questions.
You don't know where you are and what the score is.
Well, that's the thing. I went back in. Because I answered the questions fine.
Oh.
And then a play and a half or two plays later, Jim's guy's hand on my shoulder going, get him out. Because I was asking him, like, what play is that? And he's like, what?
We only run about 12 of them.
You've known that play for 15 years, you know, for a decade, right? So then I had to come off, and I didn't play the rest of the night. And there were and I didn't remember parts of the conversations later on. So that it does take a minute sometimes.
Isn't it crazy how one part of your brain almost takes care of the other? You know, it's almost like
much like you do here with me.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was very quick-witted, Steve.
Right.
Making fun of something that isn't. I got to believe that there are some times where there are parts of your brain that are like, we got a little deficiency over here. Let's take care of that. And they pull more – part of your brain pulls more weight sometimes.
Yeah, and I think some of it, too, is you're fighting against it. You know, you fight right. against it. Somehow, subconsciously, you don't want anything to be wrong. You're trying to function normally, right? And you act – and certain cues about conversation stuff just kick in, and you do it automatically, whether it's conscious or not. So it's easy. And we used to everybody was up in arms over the Tua concussion in the first game against the Bills. It just kicks in, man. It's instinctive.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not the best thing for you.
We saw earlier this week the Raiders clipped Jonathan Abram, their safety, off the roster, former first-round draft choice, and the Packers claimed him. They have injuries in their secondary, so they need help.
Right.
Might not hurt to have a guy with a little bit of attitude, too. I mean, Jonathan Abram plays like Ronnie Lott does. I mean, he recklessly throws his body around the field. He has been injured because of it. Be interesting to see how they fit him in on that Packers defense going forward, because that team – unfortunately, has had their transmission in reverse for a few weeks now. They are 3-6 with very little margin for error
And they just placed their tight end, Darren Waller, on injured reserve for a month. The Raiders did.
Yeah. I was talking about the Packers. They've had it in reverse for a month now.
Both those teams are going the wrong direction.
Yeah. I don't know. Was there an update on this? Did the Washington, D.C. Attorney General make their major announcement yet?
I have not heard that, and I have not been
notified. Because the Commanders could be facing civil suit charges.
What was that, Jay?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
So nothing's come out yet.
All right.
From the Washington, D.C. Attorney General. Apparently, there could be some civil suits coming involving ticket deposits against the Commanders for illegally holding fan
deposits.
Ticket deposits when they wanted them back, or I don't know what all the rules are. Each team is different with that stuff. We've also seen reports of financial improprieties by the Washington Commanders. I don't know if that is part of this investigation by the Washington, D.C. Attorney General.
We all make fun of the owners in our own way because, you know, they're all these guys with, you know, this cash.
This is about the toxic work culture, but apparently Attorney General Carl Racine has just released a statement. The evidence they have gathered shows Mr. Snyder was not only aware of the toxic culture within his organization, he encouraged it, participated in it. He dictated everything. So he is being cast as the ringleader of the toxic work culture. So based on the testimony of some of the women that used to work for that franchise, that's probably not surprising if you read some of their testimony. So
our good friend,
off we go, and not surprisingly, the franchise is reportedly looking into potential sale options.
Well, this is
surprise.
It's not good. Our friend of the show, Armando Salguero from Miami, Racine's also
for Outkick.com. Yeah, national columnist.
Racine, the attorney general, is also making allegations against Goodell and the NFL and about misleading the public.
Because they had knowledge of those improprieties.
Yeah, doesn't really say in the report, but Goodell and the NFL are going to be obviously implicated, which doesn't surprise you in something of this
nature. Then yesterday, knowing this was coming down, the attorneys for the Washington Commanders organization unnecessarily threw the Washington, D.C. Police Department under the bus, criticizing their handling of the Brian Robinson shooting incident.
Right.
That left a Washington Commanders player, their rookie running back, Brian Robinson, with three gunshot wounds to his leg and missed almost half the season, they started criticizing them for that. It's completely unrelated to the Attorney General's investigation, but it was basically throwing irrelevant stones at Washington, D.C. law enforcement. And while the team president for Washington Commanders said it was misplaced and out of character and out of line, that comment or that statement made by the attorneys for the Washington Commanders reportedly has ticked off the players. So the players, who all season long, under the guidance of Ron Rivera, have kept these off-the-field distractions out of their play, it's over now. They are ticked that they dragged one of the players into this stuff. And so the players on the Washington roster feel that Brian Robinson was unnecessarily mentioned in the whole legal battle that's going on off the field, and they are now hot. They're not going to say it publicly, maybe, to the media, or maybe they will. We'll find out after practice today. But they are not happy that the attorneys for the Commanders organization have pulled Brian Robinson's situation in unnecessarily to a battle with the Washington, D.C. Attorney General. So it's going to be very interesting. But the wheels might not be off yet, but they're wobbling. They're wobbling right now.
Right.
It's getting bad.
It's going to get – and this may be really ugly.
It's going to get worse before it gets better, for sure.
And it's going to spread as far as they can take it to spread. And I think everybody the AG, the Attorney General, is going to want the league to divulge the report that they had that they snuffed, the oral report that they got about the Washington workplace.
Uh-huh.
And this has nothing to do with the stuff we were talking about the financial improprieties.
No.
This is all toxic workplace environment. So it'll be obviously the league is going to be accused of hush-hushing it and not giving it enough light of day and that kind of thing.
The three words of the Attorney General's statement, he, Snyder, dictated everything. And that was the general belief all along, that Daniel Snyder was an owner who ruled with an iron fist. I mean, he was like Stalin with that organization. So to think for a second that he wasn't aware of the toxic work culture is insane. Of course he did. He had his fingers in everything that organization did.
Mm-hmm.
So this statement from Attorney General Carl Racine doesn't surprise me at all. The evidence shows, this is a statement, the evidence shows Mr. Snyder was not only aware of the toxic culture within his organization, he encouraged it, participated in it, he dictated everything. That is a pretty damning statement based on the information that they found. So that is around the NFL, which is brought to you by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. We have to take a break here because when we return, it is Ultimate Fantasy Football Lineup Time presented by FanDuel, and it will be brought to you by ESPN fantasy football guru Field Yates, who joins us next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, here we are on One Bills Live on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And at this time in the show, you know what that means. Time for the Ultimate Fantasy Lineup, presented by FanDuel. Make every moment more. And here to do the honors, as always, in Week 10, is the one and only ESPN's Field Yates. Field, let's go. Week 10. We're on the back stretch here for fantasy football leagues. You only got a few more weeks before, playoffs and everything.
Yeah, and I think, Brownie, this is the time of the year where daily fantasy becomes even more popular because you got a couple of teams who are at the bottom of their season-long standings, and you're saying to yourself, all right, this team ain't it. It's time for me to turn my focus to 2023, but also to my daily fantasy lineup. So let's dive right into it. Let's begin with a quarterback, and I want to note something that I always send these lineups early in the week, so we have to monitor health reports throughout the week.
Uh-huh.
My quarterback for this week, it's Kyler Murray. priced at $7,800. And yesterday, Wednesday, the Cardinals did not hold a practice. They held a walkthrough. But on their projected practice report, Kyler was listed as a DNP with a hamstring injury. Now, just about 10 minutes ago, before this segment, they did hit the practice field again, and Kyler Murray was out there. So,
look at this. Sounds like Kyler, to the minute.
Yeah, anyways, it's what it's all about right here. So Kyler sounds like he'll be potentially available for the Cardinals on Sunday against the Los Angeles Rams. And the important part here for Kyler is that he has been running a whole lot more recently, and not all of it's design runs, and maybe they limit those a bit if this hamstring injury lingers into the weekend, but some of his scrambles are so valuable. 7.8 carries per game over the past three for Kyler Murray. He slots in as my quarterback.
And you think the projected points of about 20 points, is that enough of, and you think he's going to overperform on that against the Rams?
I think so. I think there's a chance for it, Steve. And, you know, the Rams have been really good in limiting opposing passing touchdowns this season, other than the second half against the Bills all the way back in week one. We saw it last week. You know, Tom Brady literally needed, what, 59 minutes and 59 seconds to score a touchdown through the air for the Bucs. But Kyler can do so much damage with his leg that I think it makes it a worthwhile play there at quarterback. And we can bring that right to the running backs, where I think there are some interesting names this week. We start with Travis Etienne for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's been on a tear of late. $8,000 is the price. It's gone up a lot. They traded away James Robinson. And even the week before James Robinson was traded, he had zero total touches in a game. A player that, as an undrafted rookie, had over 1,000 rushing yards, has all of a sudden become, or had become, a non-factor for them. Then he gets traded, and Travis Etienne's been just exceptional over the past 4 weeks. One of the league's best rushers. Not a ton of passing game volume, but with the way that he's running the ball right now, too good to ignore. David Montgomery right behind him, and Montgomery for the Bears, priced a little bit lower than we'd seen him in the past, $6,700. And Montgomery faces off against a Lions defense that, contrary to what you saw last week against the Packers, has actually been really good. Really bad this year. So I think that the Bears, who all of a sudden have themselves a very intriguing young quarterback in Justin Fields, will be able to move the football effectively against Detroit in a game that I think Chicago can certainly win.
Right. So I'm guessing the fact that it's Detroit's defense, who hasn't been able to stop a clock, is what convinces
Except for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Well, right. It convinces you to start Montgomery, even though Khalil Herbert at times has been a little bit of a volume vulture for him. Right?
He has been. Yeah, you're right. But over the past couple of weeks, we've seen the snap share drip way back in the favor of David Montgomery. For a while, it was getting closer to 50-50. Over the past 2 weeks, it's been a 2-1 split. David Montgomery is the guy, clearly the guy, and I think that'll be the case again. I don't know if that's as simple as David Montgomery's a superior player in their eyes, or it's a young team. As a matter of fact, not that they have necessarily Josh Allen, but I think the way that they're going about this kind of reminds me of when Brandon Bean took over as the head coach with Sean McDermott, as the GM with Sean McDermott as the head coach for the Bills. You kind of had to move on from some overpriced or high-priced veterans to acquire some draft capital, and it was short-term pain for long-term gain. And one of the things that was always steady in Buffalo was the locker room and the culture. And David Montgomery is a respected leader there. I don't know that if you just make him a backup or a bench player, it goes over well for a team that I think needs to hold on to those good vibes in the locker room.
Well, let's go on and move down to your list of wide receivers. And it starts, of course, with Cooper Kupp.
Got a theme here, though, Steve.
I see a lot of Arizona LA Ram on this list.
Yep, plenty of this game. I feel like the NFC West has led us to a lot of games so far this year, but Cooper Kupp, you can't price him high enough. There really isn't a number that's too high for Cooper Kupp or Tyreek Hill right now with the way that they are putting up numbers over 20 points per game for Cooper Kupp. Yes, he's priced at $9,200, but Arizona could well be without Buda Baker, their all-pro safety. And you know, certainly if Matthew Stafford's out, it dampens my view a little bit of this Rams offense, but everything funnels through Cooper Kupp. He's wide receiver one. Wide receiver two, same game. Rondale Moore, who's got 8+ targets in 3 of his past 4 games, really good after the catch. And the Rams defensively are good. One area they've struggled, though, is containing players after the catch. I don't know if that's a randomness issue, whether it's a speed issue, whether it's a tackling issue, but They have not been nearly as good after the catch on defense, which is why Rondale Moore fits nicely. And then Donovan Peoples-Jones has been a nice player for the Cleveland Browns, especially over the past five games for them. He has really emerged as their number two wideout. If David Njoku is out for Cleveland, he will be the number two pass catcher in this offense. And Miami's got some good personnel, but if you go back and look at the numbers, guys, their defense has just been awful this year in terms of fantasy football, especially against opposing quarterbacks. How do quarterbacks normally score a lot of their points? And throw the football, Donovan Peoples-Jones could benefit from a favorable matchup against the Dolphins.
All right, and then one more swing at this Rams-Cardinals game at the tight end position.
That's right, back to the Zach Ertz well, who's been really solid this year amongst tight ends, one of the very best, not one of the very few, averaging over 10 fantasy points per game is Zach Ertz, and he has emerged as a go-to target for Kyler Murray. Again, this Rams defense, talked about it after the catch. Zach can add some value after the catch as a runner. I like him here. You know, you kind of, because there's no Mark Andrews, you kind of have one high-priced tight end this week that's really worth it, and that's Travis Kelce, but you're going to have to find some value there instead, which is why you head to Zach Ertz. And also, we just got news not long ago that Darren Waller going to IR, so yet another reasonable, worthwhile tight end not available this week.
And he rounded out with a flex position with a wide receiver in Jerry Jeudy and the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, Judy's kind of been better of late. He has seemingly found his footing, and this Broncos offense obviously has been really, really bad this year. But the Broncos play on Sunday against the Titans, and the Titans-Chiefs game was ridiculous this past Sunday night. I mean, just a nail-biter. They went to overtime. I have no idea how Tennessee kept it that close, but defending the pass has not been their strength. It's really, really, really surprising that that game was just 20-17. A good matchup here for Jerry Jeudy, who has a lot of talent. It's just a click. Not much has clicked for the Broncos offense, but perhaps that changes on Sunday coming out of their bye.
All right, and then we wrap it up with a defense that has a favorable matchup.
Yeah, favorable matchup here for the Saints. Play the Pittsburgh Steelers, who coming off their bye week, maybe things change a little bit. Mike Tomlin seems to be suggesting that the biggest changes are really just like doing things better, not necessarily changing things up. So the Saints at $3,900, they're a Jekyll and Hyde defense. A couple weeks ago, they shut out the Raiders, who I think I would argue have much more talent than the Steelers do on offense when you factor in Derek Carr as compared to Kenny Pickett. And yet this past week, they didn't do much against Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. I think they'll look more like the version we saw against the Raiders 2 weeks ago, facing off against Pittsburgh. So they get the nod there on defense at $3,900.
Who knocked it out of the park fantasy-wise last week? Was there any player that emerged out of nowhere? That
Joe Mixon.
Joe Mixon, yeah. I don't know about nowhere, because obviously Joe's right. Been, he's a well-known player. But he had the 8th most fantasy points ever in a game. 55.1 for Joe Mixon, 5 touchdowns. He was excellent on the ground, excellent through the air. And, you know, to be honest with you, he hasn't been that great this year. If not for his volume, not have been nearly as highly ranked as he was. But last week he did the inverse, right? He was super efficient, even way more so than he had been all season. So nice of Joe to flip the script. Unfortunately, you're not going to have him this week because the Bengals are on their bye. But I feel like after what he did last week, he's probably earned that time off.
All right, Field. Thanks as always for help here in week 10. We'll catch you next week for week 11.
All right, guys. Sounds good. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Field.
All right, that's Field Yates, ESPN's NFL insider and fantasy football expert, joining us here with the ultimate fantasy lineup for Week 10, presented by FanDuel. Make every moment more.
It gets tougher as the season wears on because the injury list is like, you don't know.
Plus, you have bye weeks. Next week's the last bye week. And then,
yeah, that's nice.
You know, for fantasy leagues, you know, week 13, 14, you start getting into the playoffs.
Yeah, like, you know, Darren Waller and these guys going down, and which are, you know, they're not deal breakers, but you got to keep an eye on your roster to.
Well, yeah.
You know,
in our little control room league, which is for fun more than anything else, because I didn't.
When's that fun start? Because I'm.
Yeah, you're not having a lot, are you? But I got Joe Burrow and Joe Mixon. They're on my bench this week on bye, so I got to. I got to come up with some answers here.
I do not care. That is your problem.
It is my problem.
I hope your team stumbles and falls and crashes.
May you have 7 guys in your lineup on bye this week.
I hope you light it on fire, man.
Yeah. We will take a break here. When we come back, we're going to get some phone calls going as we are asking you today, knowing that Case Keenum is taking first-team reps in practice again today. What do you think are the Bills' chances against the Vikings if it is Case Keenum starting at quarterback for the Bills on Sunday? Let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or hit us up on the tweet sheet at 1BillsLive. We're back in a moment. Stay tuned. All right, it's time now for Sound Bits, presented by Tim Hortons, where you're going to hear from Von Miller, Stephon Diggs, and others following Wednesday's practice as they reacted to Wednesday's update on Josh Allen's elbow injury.
I'm excited for those guys. I'm excited for the opportunity. I'm excited for Case. If he has the opportunity to go out there and play, if Josh can, you know, tough it out and play, then I'm excited for him too. So it really doesn't matter who we got out there. I got belief in all of those guys, 100%.
He's day-to-day, and the next question will be, is he going to play? And the answer is, we'll see. So based on the medical report that we have, Josh is day-to-day. We will see how he does. We use common sense, and obviously we factor a lot of things into it, the medical report being one of them, and our doctor's wisdom and knowledge.
We know he's going to be doing everything in his power to get back on the field. We don't have any details about the injury or anything like that, but we know he'll be back as soon as possible. He's a dog. You know, that's a great word for him, because he's going to be in that training room 24/7 doing everything he can to get back on the field. And from what I can tell, he's in a pretty good mood.
You take a look, deeper look at it, and, you know, you see the play at the end of the game where a guy hit his arm, and you say, okay, yeah, he's battling with some stuff right now. But, you know, Josh has seemed the same. You know, he's the same Will Ferrell that I've known since I first got here. You know, he's still got his energy up, still he's not down, walking around with his lip poked out or anything like that. Like, everything seems normal here, and, you know, we just take it one day at a time, and we just had to see.
He's just a tough dude, resilient guy, and I'm letting him play this out as he can, and right now I'm taking snaps with Case, but Josh is a competitive sucker, tough sucker too, and we'll see what happens come Sunday.
We can't change the standard. You got to play up to the standard. You got to do your job, you know what I'm saying? And I've always lived in the bubble of farming your own land, and they say do your 111. So no matter how you dress it up, guys got to play well. You got to do your job, and you got to perform. Josh makes the wheels a little bit more greased, of course, you know what I'm saying, because he's just special. So it's just like, of course, it's not even easy when he's out there, you know what I'm saying? Things do happen out there when he's out there. So he do make the wheels a little greased, but they got to turn.
All right. That is Sound Bits, presented by Tim Hortons. Got to go to the phones, though, as we're asking you, with Case Keenum practicing for a second straight day with the ones, what do you think the Bills' chances are against the Vikings if it is, in fact, Case Keenum starting at quarterback on Sunday? We go to the phones, and leading us off today is Jack and Kenmore. What do you got for us, Jack? You're on 1Bills Live.
Okay, there's a couple of questions I'm going to ask you right now, okay? Mr. Tasker, too, because he played the game. If our defense plays great, okay, we have a chance to win this game. If they don't, we're going to get beat. But maybe this is a blessing in disguise, because they're going to cut back that offense, maybe run the ball a little more, short passes, but we're losing Superman. So I want your answer here, Mr. Tasker and Mr. Brown.
Okay.
Hey,
thanks for the call, Jack.
Jack, I agree with everything you said. If the defense can win any game they want, if they, you know, get some turnovers and, you know, defensive touchdown, all of that stuff, yeah, absolutely, no question about it. And we are losing the best player in the league, no question. Josh is a great eraser. If anything bad happens on a play, Josh has the ability to, like, make it okay, get a first down, make it a touchdown. That is awesome for a team to have that guy. Sometimes that does work to your detriment, because guys start to depend a little bit too much on the guy with the cape.
That won't happen if Case is playing this week.
The urgency to correct mistakes isn't as great, because what would have been a real issue in a film study, like, hey, you can't do this, you got to fix this, you got to, that turns into a touchdown. It's hard to beat the guy up on a play that went for a touchdown, when in actuality, they should have gotten beat up a little bit for the way they took the rep. that urgency kind of goes away when you got a guy like Josh Allen taking snaps. So the team gets into a place where certain parts of it atrophy because they never get tested because Josh is so good. Maybe there's a little bit of that going on. It can. I've seen it happen at other times when I've said this before. I don't know if I said it yesterday or whatever, but there are teams like when I was with CBS and doing games around the league all the time, you'd see a guy like Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. Some of these quarterbacks, and you know, Pat Mahomes certainly does it for the Chiefs in this day and age. They're so good that certain flaws in the team's roster never get exposed. And the team never really sees it as an urgency to fix. So when the guy gets plucked out of there, like Tom Brady in New England, or Peyton Manning with the
Colts.
You know, they get into a Super Bowl with the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning, and they're just and they get their heads handed to them with one of the all-time great offensive performances during the entire year that the Broncos put together with Peyton Manning at quarterback. One of the all-time juggernaut seasons of an offense got crushed in a Super Bowl because one of their weaknesses that Peyton Manning had covered up all year got exposed. The Seahawks crushed them with a four-man rush they had no answer for.
Yeah.
And stuff like that happens in the league. And you look at the Bills, and Josh is so good, when you take him out of there, you might find out, well, you know, they needed to fix this, and they really never even had it exposed before.
I don't know
if that'll happen, but it could.
I agree with you, Jack, though. I think the defense has to play their best game of the season if Case Keenum is at quarterback, and that means probably holding the Vikings to about 14 points, which is just above their season average. You know, they're allowing 14.8 points a game. I think they got to be right there around 14 because I think Case Keenum's good enough to get you 17, maybe 20.
Well,
with it, unless you get a couple of big scoring plays from your defense or your special teams.
Or turnovers.
If they spot you seven.
Right. Maybe you can get it. It's a game that you really need to win the turnover battle. That's one of the things you can take away from Minnesota that they've thrived on. They are plus big on
plus
the turnover.
Six.
On the turnover ratio. So that helps an enormous amount. That's why they beat the Dolphins down in Florida, was the turnovers. You can't turn it over. Case Keenum knows that, and so do the running backs. So that'll be an issue as well. So, yeah, if your defense plays great and you don't turn it over, this is going to be a close game. And if you don't have the lead, you're going to have a chance to win it at the end.
Let's go to Ron in Bradford next. What do you got for us, Ron? You're on One Bills Live.
Chris, Steve, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I say we've surrounded Josh with lots of talent up there. And I say our defense stands up and we win 21-10. And I look for him to run the ball heavy.
Okay. Running game. You're going to see more of it in your eyes. All right. That's fair enough, Ron. I mean, I suppose it's possible. I think this team might be throwing the ball a lot to their running backs. I don't know if they're going to be running it 30 times a game if the scheme remains largely the same.
If they come out and run the football well and predominantly.
Yeah.
I got to say, I'll be shocked.
Well, I will say this, though, and we talked about this when we were standing out there watching practice. Dalvin Tomlinson is their best interior run stuffer, the defensive tackle, and he's got an injury that's got him week to week, and it doesn't look like he's going to get back for this game after missing last week's game with an injury as well. If he's out of the equation, that certainly helps.
Yeah, that leaves the Minnesota Vikings with Harrison Phillips as the nose tackle with Chris Tonga behind him, I don't know how you say his first name, Tonga, as their backup. Dalvin Tomlinson, a defensive end, they run that 4-3 like Pittsburgh Steelers. That's going to be an issue.
3-4.
A 3-4 defense that's going to be an issue because you don't see it that often. Tomlinson being out, that's an issue for Minnesota's run defense.
Yeah.
It's an issue.
We have to take a break here. When we come back, we are going to talk more Vikings as we are going to be joined by former Vikings linebacker, current radio color analyst for the Minnesota Vikings Radio Network. Pete Bursich is going to join us as we talk Vikings with him next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Hour number two on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is the show, and we are talking about the Bills' chances if, in fact, Case Keenum is your starting quarterback on Sunday. You can let us know what you think there. We're waiting to catch up with radio color analyst for the Vikings radio network, Pete Bursich, former Vikings linebacker. But while we wait for him, let's take a quick phone call as we go to Patrick in South Buffalo. What do you got for us, Patrick? You're on One Bills Live. Patrick, are you there? Oh, Patrick, I got to put you on hold because you're listening to your radio and not your phone. We move ahead to Earl in Wellsville. What do you got for us, Earl? You're on One Bills Live. Well, hold on. You're not pulling up.
You hear me, guys?
There you are, Earl.
There you go. Go ahead, Earl.
Hey, I tell you, I've been hearing a lot of the sport analysts and stuff like that, how they're cutting the Bills down on being number one and all that. And it really kind of ticks me off because Casey is not a bad quarterback. And he's proved it in other games. He's had situations when in the past where he had to run for his life. But if our line blocks and gives him the time like they have for Josh and our defense plays the game, we're going to win this game.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel.
Yeah, the defense has to show up. We've kind of, Steve and I have already discussed that to a certain extent, and thanks for the call, Earl. Time for Case is going to be important because while he can move around, he doesn't have the mobility of Josh, who, as Steve pointed out earlier, being the great eraser, when the pass protection sometimes is suspect, he erases that and goes and makes a play off script. Keenum can move around a little bit, but not the same way that Josh can, so that will be a difference. The thing to keep an eye on this week is Spencer Brown. He returned to the practice setting in a limited capacity yesterday. He was dressed again for practice today. Hopefully he does a little bit more today, because if you can get him back in the lineup to get up over there on that right side, you know, with his length and being able to steer guys around the pass rush arc, around the pocket, that would be a welcome presence on that offensive line on Sunday, if, in fact, Keenum's the starter.
Right. Then they're going to have a game plan that's tailored to Keenum. That's on Ken Dorsey. We'll see if he can get that done. No question. But Za'Darius Smith coming off the edge is going to be a problem for the Bills' offensive line. He can really go.
And Danielle Hunter's no slouch either.
Danielle Hunter is really good as well. So they've got some edge guys, as most 3-4 defenses do. It's going to be a test. But I'll say this. They've got everything to play for, no question about it. Think about this. What would the NFL landscape look like if the Bills win by like 10 points over a 7-1 Vikings team with their backup quarterback? That's a statement game.
Yeah.
That's a statement game. There's no denying it. That if you can pull that off, there's a huge carrot out there for the Bills to play for, the rest of the roster I'm talking about, to play for in Josh's absence. And it would say a lot about it, which is also why it's really a daunting task. The Vikings are a really good football team. They're well coached. They're playing on an uptick. They're playing with confidence. Kirk Cousins is an established guy in their organization. They got weapons on the outside. Their defense is playing really good opportunistic football. They're getting a lot of turnovers. And they're doing a lot of things right. They got Dalvin Cook, who's playing well. And people have been talking about how, I don't know if he might have lost a step. Yeah, and the guy snaps off a 65-yard touchdown run against the Dolphins. So after breaking a couple tackles. So the Vikings are a really, really good football team, and it's going to take all hands on deck, even with Josh Allen in the lineup. They've not only have to have all hands on deck with Case Keenum at quarterback, but they're all hands on deck have got to play their best. So that's what you're up against. You may as well not sugarcoat it. This is going to be a tough game with Case Keenum playing quarterback. It's going to be a tough game with Josh Allen playing quarterback. This team's 7-1 for a reason.
Right. I think the hope is that the defense can get a little bit healthier so they can play their best game. And so it's certainly good news that Matt Milano and Dane Jackson are out of red non-contact jerseys. So hopefully they're up. And it'd be nice, even if he plays a little bit this Sunday, Tre'Davious White, if he can return to the lineup and give them something on the back end, that would be a welcome addition as well. But let's go back to the phones, and we go to Jim in Hilton. What do you got for us, Jim? You're on One Bills Live.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. First-time caller.
No, thanks for doing it.
I think the offensive line and the defensive line play up to their potential, with emphasis on the offensive line. You have to give Case time to look over the field, not make him carry the team on his back, which has happened to Josh on several occasions in the past.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. That's, you know, it's like Coach McDermott says all the time. It starts up front, and, you know, the defensive line, to a man, when I was talking to him in the locker room after the game last week, said we didn't tackle well enough. That's on us. And so they're going to be motivated to play a much better game this week with a team that has a much better back in Dalvin Cook, and a quarterback that usually gets it out fast in Kirk Cousins. And then the offensive line, I don't think they were all that happy with the lack of traction they got in the run game, aside from Josh, who, as we know, ran for a 30-plus yard touchdown. But aside from that, there was very little to take from Buffalo's running game last week against the Jets. They're going to be motivated to play better as well. We have on the line with us to talk more Vikings now, former Vikings linebacker, current radio color analyst Pete Bursich joining us. How are we doing, Pete? Good to have you.
Doing great. How are you guys?
Doing okay.
Doing great. Thanks for coming on with us. What's the vibe like? What's the vibe like in Minnesota? You guys, you got to be sitting, feeling really good about a 7-1 record, and you know the way the team's playing, it seems like a really well-rounded roster, and they're playing well in all phases.
Yeah, they, you know, they really are, and you know, the team's won 6 in a row, all by one score, which is a complete and total 180 from what we had experienced a year ago when we had lost almost a record number of games by one score or less. They've played well enough to win, and they've hung in there. You know, can they play better? Absolutely. We have to remember we're still offensively learning a new system, new scheme, defensively learning a new system and a new scheme. And so, you know, I think expectations going in have been exceeded. You know, you want to put yourself in a good position to make a run late in the season. Obviously, winning the division's the fastest way into the playoffs, and they've put themselves in a great position as of right now. And you know, now I think for the fan base and for most people, it's kind of a wait and see. These next 2 weeks will be a good litmus test for this club to see exactly where we are.
What did you make of the remarkable cram session that TJ Hockenson had last week in 4 days? I mean, you just talked about it. It's a brand new system that guys on the roster have been getting used to since May. This guy drops in out of the sky via trade, and in 4 days knows enough of the system where he said he felt comfortable in the huddle on every single play. Kirk said he's not looking at him like he had 7 heads in the huddle, and he's got a 9-catch day. He was instrumental on that final drive too.
He was, and he by no means played perfectly either. There were some things that went on that, you know, blocking and schematic-wise that he could do better. I think the add of TJ Hockenson is good for this team for a number of reasons. And, yes, you know, he's still learning the playbook. But kind of like what you guys have experienced, it's you know, you have Josh Allen and you have Stephon Diggs. You know, we have Justin Jefferson and Kirk Cousins. And I think early on, Philadelphia, even Detroit, early on with Okuda, who's a really, really good cornerback for a young player, just being able to jam play man or jam and have a safety over the top. And a lot of that has, you know, two man has a big, big coverage for that. And you can't play two man when a quarterback is scrambling, right? Justin Fields will never see that coverage because as soon as he sees it, he can just pull that thing down and run till he hits his head on the goalpost. Josh Allen doesn't see a lot of it because he's such a great scrambler, but we can see it because Cousins is not a scramble guy. He is a throw, you know, he's not, and he doesn't really scramble to extend plays much. He doesn't run the football. So with all the attention going at Jefferson, we finally have another guy underneath who can win those matchups consistently, whether it's against a linebacker or a safety. It's hard to double team two different guys at the same time. And yeah, Justin's going to beat you deep, and you want to make sure that he's the quickest way to die, metaphorically speaking. And you know, Hockenson, I think, is going to get a lot of attention because he fills that specific need in this offense.
Give us an idea of what Kevin O'Connell has been like for this team. I know he's probably a big switch from Mike Zimmer, obviously, but, you know, Kevin O'Connell, first year in there, the new system, new culture, new this, new that, and, man, it's hard. It would be – you'd be hard-pressed to get off to a better start.
Yeah, I think you really have to give a lot of credit to the general manager, Kwesi Adolfo-Mensa, for putting this group together. You know, Kevin's out there, and he just – he's a completely – like you said, he's an offensive-minded coach. Zimmer was a defensive-minded coach, you know. Zimmer had the grumpy gene. You know, this guy is new. He's young. He's fresh. He's all those things. And I know going into the season, we're all saying, oh, this is great, but, you know, wait till we hit the bump in the road. Wait till something goes the wrong way. We stubbed our toe against Philadelphia, but since then, you know, have rebounded. But there's a different energy. There's a different level of everything in that respect. And I really have to give him a lot of credit since we didn't have many of our starters didn't even play in the preseason and then come out against Green Bay and play as well as they did physically. Finishing games, the conditioning that these guys are in, the attention that they pay to physical conditioning and upkeeping, staying healthy, all those different things. There's a million things that a head coach is responsible for and has to keep his finger on. And I think he's done a wonderful job. He's a great communicator. He's just a great guy to be around. And, you know, we're around him on a limited basis with our jobs, but as a player, you couldn't ask for more. You couldn't ask for more than having a head coach that you just enjoy being around and being coached by. And, you know, I think overall he's doing a wonderful job.
One thing that kind of sticks out on the stat pages, Pete, is the Vikings last in the league in red zone defense. Now, in their defense, they've allowed a league low 19 red zone possessions. So they're not letting teams down there all that much. But when they do, teams are putting it in the end zone 79% of the time. Is there anything that has stuck out to you when they're defending that area of the field that even seems problematic?
No, I think it's we're a little different down there. We don't blitz as much. You know, it's a part of the field where you see a lot of zero blitzes and teams doing those kinds of things. You know, just tightening coverage up, so to speak. This defense really does a great job of letting the pass rush do its deal and then having the guys behind them capitalize on it. And the two really go hand in glove. When you get down in that red zone, it's a different, you know, different set of coverages, different group of coverages. You don't play middle closed a lot. Some mental errors, I think, have come into play. But it's kind of hard. It's hard to really put a finger on exactly what's going on down there. They just have to, especially on the coverage side, I think, tighten things up quite a bit.
So the Bills come in to this game, perhaps, and we don't know for sure. We have no idea what's going to happen, but Case Keenum may be the guy taking snaps. He'll be out throwing to Steph Diggs in this game. Yeah. You've got Dalvin Cook and on your side, James Cook on the Bills' side. There's a little bit of a lot of side storylines here, but you know, let's concentrate on Case Keenum, a guy who's got a little bit of a legacy there in Minnesota. You know, how does that change things? From your perspective, have a guy that perhaps Case Keenum might be the guy rather than an MVP guy like Josh Allen?
I think from a schematic standpoint, it changes a lot of things. You're not going to get these called runs with Case Keenum, right? Right. You know, for you guys last week against the Jets, and it was Josh Allen that on the ground really, you know, put the points up for you. I don't think you're going to see that kind of play calling with Case Keenum. The fans, the people, everybody in Minnesota, they, you know, they love Case and what he did here. They love him for who he is, and that's he's a tough, gritty type of a quarterback. He's going to hang in there to the last second, take the hit, deliver the ball when it needs to be, where it needs to be, and his teammates respect the hell out of him for it, and he's a great leader. So, you know, is he physically as gifted as a Josh Allen? No, absolutely not, but as a leader, as a guy with experience, a guy who's been in big games, I mean, you're not losing much at all in, I think, in those categories. And in some ways it might count against you in this respect, meaning the players that were around back when Case was around, they understand who he is. They know who he is. They know he's not your run of the mill average backup quarterback. They know he's a good quarterback. And I think they also know, kind of like what I alluded to earlier with TJ Hockenson and Justin Jefferson, you guys depend on Diggs very, very heavily in the passing game. And with Keenum, I think that's going to change. I don't think he's necessarily going to feel comfortable throwing the 50-50 ball 60, 70 yards down the field, to Diggs or whomever. He's going to execute the plan, and I think, as it's called, and I think that's going to bring in a lot of other offensive weapons for you guys. So I think you'll see a little bit more of a balanced offense, with Keenum in there, probably a little more attention to the running game, and sticking with it with Singletary, obviously. So in that respect, I think there's quite a bit that's going to be different if Case Keenum comes in. But then again, that's just scheme and X's and O's. Like, he's still a very, very good quarterback, and we miss him up here, that's for sure.
Flipping that around to your guy's quarterback and Kirk Cousins, he hasn't turned the ball over a whole lot, but when he does, it seems to be on deeper throws down the field. All six of his interceptions are more than, 10 air yards instead of the short stuff. And I realize you're talking high percentage throw versus a low percentage throw that's traveling further. But still in all, how would you describe Kirk's distribution of the football thus far this year? Because we see these big plays that Jefferson has turned in on an almost weekly basis. But then you see those turnover numbers and you're like, well, what's going on there? So how would you describe Kirk's distribution in the passing game?
Well, I think a lot of those interceptions were early on. A couple of them were just really bad throws. I mean, you guys and you watch the film of the Jets game and you see the first interception that Allen throws and you're scratching your head. You're like, this is not what he normally does. And so Cousins has had a few of those. Some of that has to do, Cousins is he doesn't make it up as he goes. He executes the offense, right? He executes the call. He's a 1-2-3, whatever has to be done. And so if he's not completely comfortable or familiar or, doesn't know everything to the nth degree, then things get a little bit crazy. Now you see the interception he threw against the Commanders, the play before. We had a big play before, play clock's running down. We get a delay of the game. He's visibly frustrated. And then the next play he throws that, ball to the corner and it just gets tipped up and intercepted. So he's throwing more of the 50-50 type throws to Jefferson, which I think is a great thing because Jefferson's going to come down with those, more. He is leaving some meat on the bone. I think he's if he could see the entire field and know this offense a little bit better, he's going to be able to find a guy like KJ Osborne here and there streaking down the field. So there's still a lot of potential with this offense, especially in the passing game. I think he's extremely comfortable with Jefferson. Obviously, Hockenson, he's developed that rapport very, very quickly. He's not a guy that kind of makes it up as it goes, right? I mean, we've seen a couple of scrambles on these highlights and things like that. Not normal for Kirk Cousins, right? He's normally going to execute the offense as it's called. Now, they've given him a lot more mentally to do before the snap as far as the shifts and the motions, but also more leeway into getting the offense in a position, I think, where they're going to have success. So he's involved in the, instead of just executing an offense and what's called, he's much more involved in this offense. He has more of a say, I think, in this offense. And that's a growing point for him. So, overall, I think he's played very well. He hung in there. When Kirk struggles is when he feels the pressure. And he hung in there, took a couple hits in the Washington game that were really big. He actually had to come out of play because he got the wind knocked out of him on one. But he's showing that toughness. And if he can hang in there and take a hit every now and again, you know, we'll see better and better football out of him.
And I know we spoke about it a minute ago, but if TJ Hockenson is everything that they dream he's going to be, does that change anything for the scope of their offense? I mean, I know they got Dalvin Cook and they got weapons everywhere. And Justin Jefferson is a dynamite. What does that mean to Kirk Cousins and where he throws it? Is that, you know what I mean? Because you certainly don't want to take any opportunities away from Justin Jefferson. Who pays the price for Hockenson getting 9 catches last week?
I think you got to look at Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne in that respect. You know, you have to look at those guys. You see, I think you're still gonna have Jefferson as a primary. You're still gonna have those situations with the receivers and the routes that they run. I think what Hockenson gives is an outlet. He gives an answer, right? We've struggled with some of the hot reads, let's say, in blitzing, picking up blitzes. Our offense has been feast or famine, but not from an explosive standpoint. We're talking 8-10 minute drives. You know, you come out against the Commanders and you just march the ball right down the field. Boom, 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 boom. And then you punt the next, I think, 5 or 4 possessions. I mean, it's the ability to move the chains. It seems like we can get down the field, put points on the board, and then in subsequent possessions, we just have a problem moving the chains. We have a problem getting things going, especially on the road. And so I think Hockenson kind of brings that, right? A chain mover. And no one wants to be described as that who wants to be that guy. But I think in this offense, he's going to fit that bill. He's going to give, again, Cousins an outlet. When things down the field don't look right, he can just get that ball to him. And with his size and, you know, with his 6'5" frame and his catch radius and those things, he's really going to help this offense sustain drives. And I think that's the key. So I there's room for him in this offense. I think there's room for him. I don't think having him there is going to take away much from Jefferson. I think he's just going to give this offense another option on some of the shorter throws or when the primary receiver is not open.
Pete, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate you
kind
of spelling it out for the Vikings so we're a little more prepared on Sunday. We'll see you out here. Have a safe trip.
Thanks, Pete.
All right, thank you. Looking forward to it.
All right, that's Vikings radio color analyst Pete Bursich joining us here, former Vikings linebacker. Interesting that I wanted to ask him about that red zone stuff because it sticks out like a sore thumb on the stat sheet, like Vikings last in the league in red zone defense. They haven't let people down there very much, but when you get down there, you're punching it in. Like 80%? That's not good at all. That's really bad.
Yeah, it's bad.
The league average is 40%.
I think one of the
it's
things
double.
I think one of the things that makes them 7-1, though, outside of that, is the fact that they get turnovers. So teams are losing possessions when they, they're using opportunities to get down there, and that's a crusher. So it all works hand in hand to give you the stats you get. You can be 7-1 and be the last team in the league at allowing touchdowns in the red zone. That's almost like it's like a parlay bet, Like, how do you figure? What are the odds of it? But that's the way it is. The turnovers are what the big difference is, and that's the big equalizer. And if the more you look at it, the more it comes down to that. Particularly with Case Keenum for the Buffalo Bills, if the Bills don't turn it over, if they just and punting is not bad, if they just don't turn it over and give them extra opportunities, this is going to be a very close game. And if you can get into the red zone, and they do stink at red zone defenses, even this week, you're going to have a chance to win this game, and not only win it, but win it handily. But you can't turn it over and give those weapons that we were just talking about with Pete Bursich. You can't give it to those guys.
Yeah. The Vikings they have the third highest yards per carry average against them in the red zone. It's almost 4 yards a carry in the red zone where the space is tight and it's hard to get yards down there on the ground. They're giving it up.
You take out Tomlinson out of that lineup, it doesn't get better. It gets worse.
I know. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to be joined by a former Bills wide receiver. What a week for him to be here with Jefferson and Diggs going head-to-head. Lee Evans He's going to be our legend of the game this week. He's coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and pleased to be joined now by Bills legend and former wide receiver, former first-round draft choice in 2004. It is the one and only Lee Evans joining us. How we doing, Lee?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and the reason we're having you is because we're going to have you here at Highmark Stadium on Sunday, as you are this week's legend of the game when the Bills host the Vikings. Legend of the Game is presented by the BFLO Store, the official retailer of the Buffalo Bills. And as has been the case with Legends of the Game, you'll be able to catch Lee out at the BFLO Store on Saturday, November 12th, 1 to 2 p.m. on Transit Road for some autographs. You can also download and visit the Bills app and enter for a chance to win a $250 BFLO Store gift card and a signed Lee Evans football. Pretty good deal. And then on Sunday, obviously, you're going to be at the game. But at 10 a.m., Gillette and Signature Cuts on the Boulevard, Lee is going to be styled by team barbers. Now, this is going to be interesting, Lee, in light of the fact that there's not a lot up top, but I guess they're going to be working that beard a little bit on you.
Yeah, you know, trim up the goatee a little bit. I can let it grow a little bit, you know, see if they can do a good job.
That'll be great.
Right. Give us an idea of what are you coming back by yourself? Are you bringing any family? Are you going to reconnect with some people up here? You were here for a while.
Yeah, all of the above. So I'll definitely connect with some people while I'm up there, but I'm bringing my son, who's a freshman in high school now. He just finished up his freshman year of football, and they moved him up to varsity. So he's playing well. He's having fun with it, and he's a huge Bills fan. So
excited
to come back too.
What position does he play, Lee?
He's playing receiver and DB, or receiver and running back.
Okay.
Right.
What a
right.
shocker that is. What, you know, I think it's fitting that they chose you as a legend of the game for this week's game, a game that's going to have two of the leading receivers in football right now in Justin Jefferson and Stephon Diggs. What is your, you know, kind of stance on those two guys as talents?
I mean, unbelievable. Obviously, you know, Diggs has been, obviously, you know, he was with Minnesota, so I'm sure he'll, you know, have some feeling towards that. But, you know, watching Diggs play, watching them compete, and watching them, you know, come in every day has been, you know, it's been great to watch. And, you know, he got a guy, a big, strong guy who can get him the ball down the field. You know, it's really sweet to watch, and watching what he can do with the ball after the catch is special too. So his game all the way around is one that that I watch every week, and you know, and I'm all by.
Give us an idea. What do you? It wasn't that long ago that you were out there. Give us an idea. What do you think it takes to be successful for that long? Certainly, a wide receiver is a little bit dependent on the guy pulling the trigger, a little bit of that, but a lot of it comes down to his own ability to, you know, to succeed and stay with it in the off season. Give us an idea of the insight as to how some of these guys are so productive for so long in their career.
Yeah, you know, the game is also a little different now, right? It's not the off season isn't as strenuous. The training camp isn't as strenuous. So these guys can really get a chance to, you know, kind of hone in their craft and some of the little things as far as, you know, route running technique. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's just, it's you and the ball and fighting with the man who's trying to guard you. And so I think his competitive spirit, some of the things that he does training wise in the off season, I think is great training with a lot of other guys and, you know, really not taking himself out of it, you know, just kind of drives his competitive nature. And, you know, that's really what it takes. It's all year now, even though they took some of the physical demands off of it, mentally and spiritually, you got to stay into it. And I think, you know, a lot of these young guys are really doing that. And, you know, they have the opportunity to have a lot more longevity in the league.
Lee, your name kind of came up a few weeks ago because I'm sure if, you know, your son's a Bills fan and you're watching these games, you saw Gabe Davis with two really long touchdowns, 98 and 62 yards
in the first half against the Steelers. And very quickly, your name comes up because of that Houston game where you had a couple 83-yarders in the first half. I don't know if they said it on the telecast, but they were saying it in the press box because that's the first time it happened since you did it. What do you remember about that first half? Because, you know, that's not something that anybody expects going in, no matter what kind of preparation you take into a game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was one of those games where, you know, you and the quarterback were just kind of locked in from the beginning. And, you know, JP was there and, you know, we had a good relationship together. We had a good synergy throwing and catching the ball. And, you know, if all else failed, he would just throw it up there and hope that I'd go make a play. And, you know, that quarter we were certainly hot and it was a lot of fun. And watching Gabe and Allen do it again, I mean, it's fun, right? You never expect something like that to happen, but when it does, you know, it's really, really special and really a lot of fun to be a part of.
What is your when you talk about your son being such a huge Bills fan? What are your feelings about coming back and being a legend of the game and saying hi to the stadium once again, a place where you know, he played over 100 games in the league? You had a lot of miles on that turf it was the Ralph, and give us an idea of what your thoughts are and your feelings about coming back.
I mean, I'm excited. I really am. And, you know, just to be back in Buffalo and, you know, be back around the organization and still know a few people in the organization, it'd be great to see, you know, a lot of people I haven't seen in a long time and to interact with the fans. I mean, I'm really excited. It's been a while since I've been back in this type of capacity. So, and, you know, obviously the team is doing well. It's a ton of excitement around the city, a ton of excitement around the team and the players. So, you know, when I was there, you know, we didn't have a ton of excitement. We didn't have a time like this where it was this exciting, this much excitement around the team and potential to move forward. So to see it now is certainly special, and it'll be a pleasure to be a part of.
And then, Lee, I know Bills fans always ask, you know, especially about former players that were, you know, well-liked like you. What are you doing now? I know you're in Virginia now, but what are you up to?
So finally my son started high school. So that's been a big relief. Before that, it was all, you know, travel teams and, you know, coaching his teams and moving around and doing that whole shuffle. So that was a ton of fun. He got a ton of exposure from that. And I think it really did help him going into high school, as frustrating as it was. And outside of that, I still stay, you know, busy in the real estate world, and, you know, trying to do some real estate and, you know, try to keep myself busy. But, you know, it's been, I got a 3-year-old now who's coming into the scene. Say hi. So that, he's keeping me busy as well. And, you know, so, you know, we're having fun, and he gets to see his brother compete since he never saw me compete.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Lee, look forward to crossing paths with you this weekend. Good luck. Travel safely and go Bills.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
All right, that's Bills former receiver Lee Evans, going to be the legend of the game when the Bills host the Vikings on Sunday. And if you can't get to the BFLO store appearance 1 to 2 p.m. on Saturday to get an autograph from Lee, he's also going to be on the Boulevard on the Seneca Soundstage 11 to noon, where you can meet and greet Lee, maybe take a picture, get an autograph as well. Steve and I'll take a break. Back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Collada Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, here we be on One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And be pretty cool to get Lee Evans out there as the legend of the game. I don't think he's ever done it before. Nope. I can't remember a time when he's done it before. We've seen Stevie out here a few times, and
yeah, he said it's been a while since he's been back. So
yeah, so I would estimate this is his first trip back as a legend of the game. Be pretty cool to see Lee out there. And as I mentioned to him, an appropriate week to have a legend be a wide receiver with Jefferson and Diggs going up against one another. It's pretty fascinating to see the outcome of that trade.
And now we're going to see it,
yeah,
you know, the full Monty here on Sunday because, I mean, since Jefferson's in the league, nobody has more receiving yards than that dude.
Right.
And Diggs.
Nobody's been targeted more.
Nobody's been targeted more than Diggs, and he has the second most receptions in the league since the trade was made.
Right.
So.
And I mean, it's a hard league to lead those statistics in.
Yeah, man. And I'm sure there, are a host of other examples where trades worked out for both teams that were involved, but you'd be hard-pressed to find one better than this one in the last 5 years.
I get it, too. I mean, the Bills gave more than just that one.
They gave up four total draft choices.
Right, so that's big. But I'm telling you, I don't know that there's anybody who doesn't think Buffalo loves that trade.
Yeah.
That they made. I mean, it's been great, and Diggs has been more than just statistics too, right? He's not just catching balls and putting
leadership,
up numbers.
Man.
The team thrives on his leadership. He's got he plays with an edge and some grit, even as an undersized wide receiver in by today's standards. He's got some fight and some grit and some attitude that really permeates the squad, particularly that wide receivers room and the offensive side of the ball, you know, kind of the side of the ball you need it. That's the Bills love that trade. And, the Vikings certainly aren't complaining at all. They love their guy. And I guess that's what happens when a team capitalizes on the draft pick they get as compensation in a trade and they get the right guy.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what it falls down to. I mean, and who knows if the Vikings might get four guys that are quality players. I mean, the odds say they probably won't. But that's, you know, you got to make that trade. And I don't think the Bills are looking back.
Yeah. So Lee Evans is the legend of the game. And this week's game sponsor is St. Bonaventure University. St. Bonaventure is an official education partner of the Buffalo Bills. One other thing to note about Justin Jefferson, Steve, he needs just 117 receiving yards in the game this week to reach 4,000 for his career, which if he does it, would tie him for the record for fastest to 4,000 receiving yards with Odell Beckham Jr. at 42 games. If he manages 133 yards receiving on Sunday, he will tie a Vikings team record for fastest to 1,000 yards in a season, 9 games, with Randy Moss and Adam Thielen. 1,000 yards in 9 games.
Yeah, that guy can go, man. There's just no two ways about it. He is an absolute dynamite receiver. Fast. I saw him play against the Dolphins. I watched that game today. He hurt that team. He hurt the Dolphins bad with his plays. And
well,
it was like
he destroys man coverage, much like Diggs does. He absolutely annihilates man coverage. That's why the way you got to play him is you got to bracket him over there the whole game and hope you can man up on the other side or
– yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's a hard guy like Diggs and Jefferson both. They're hard guys to get your hands on at the line of scrimmage, even when you walk up on them. And if you start having success getting your hands on them, what they do is they just back them off the line a yard, get them in the backfield, and then put them in motion. And then you can't get your hands on them because they're moving, right? So the team and the offensive coordinators give them all the help they can. But even so, even when they're static up playing the X receiver up on the line, guys can't get their hands on them enough to knock them off.
I just don't know why you give him a free release anywhere, though.
Oh, you can't. I agree.
You got to take your chances that you get a jam.
You can't play
him.
Off coverage. I mean, unless you've got a couple of guys over there. So then it becomes a numbers game every place else.
All right, big show coming your way tomorrow, as it does every Friday. The OBL Fan Friday mailbag will be open. Send your questions in on the Bills and the league at large. Greg Cosell and Micah Hyde. We'll see you tomorrow at 1:00.